Before this year, immigration had already been a prominent and highly charged topic. This election year has made it even more so. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we continue our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, with a look at the contentious issue of immigration. Republicans are all but certain to nominate Donald Trump as their candidate for president. He's attacked Mexicans coming to the U.S. as criminals and rapists. He wants to build a wall on our southern border, and he's called for a ban on Muslim immigrants. This hour, we'll hear from Iowans with contrasting perspectives and from communities in Iowa most impacted by immigrants. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we continue our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, with a look at the contentious issue of immigration. Before this year, immigration had already been a prominent and highly charged topic. This year has made it even more so. Republicans are all but certain to nominate Donald Trump as their candidate for president. Next week, he's attacked Mexicans coming to the United States as criminals and rapists. He wants to build a wall on our southern border. He's also called for a ban on Muslim immigrants. This hour, we'll hear from Iowans with contrasting perspectives on immigration, also from a couple of communities in Iowa most impacted by immigrants, Perry and Marshalltown. Let's start with those communities, and let's start with Perry, Iowa, in the southwest part of the state, where almost a quarter of Perry's nearly 9,000 residents are Hispanics. Perry High School, the high school there, is diverse, with nearly half of the student body made up of non-whites. Not at all what is typically found in a rural Iowa setting. Perry High School embraces that diversity, also in its athletics, and it shows on the basketball court, for instance, with players of Latino, Native American, and African American heritage. However, we reported on this late in February. A number of students from an opposing school chanted Trump, 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 and USA. That was at a basketball game at Perry High School. The opposing fans used Trump's disdain for illegal immigrants to target several of players of Latino descent. Joining me now to talk about their perspectives on immigration and their community's diversity in Perry, Dan Marburger. He's Perry High School principal. He's starting his 22nd year at Perry High School as its principal. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You serve close to 1,800 students, one of the most diverse districts in Iowa, over 50% minorities there. You and your wife, Elizabeth, your wife is a fourth grade teacher at Perry Elementary, I understand, and then you have five kids of your own. Also, on our conversation here, first of all, Stephanie Ivankovic is the editor and of the Perry Chief. That's Perry's oldest and only newspaper. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You've been an editor for nearly 2 years. You have a Croatian background. I don't know if I got your Croatian family name correct. Ivankovic, or is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Very good. You have a Croatian background, but you grew up in Des Moines. Let's talk with you, Dan Marburg. We talked with you back in February. Since we spoke, have there been similar incidents to the one that I described, kids from other schools taunting your kids at athletic events?
No. Actually, there hasn't been any additional taunting. I think we have some of the social media backlash sometimes that comes with our diverse school, but we have not had anything like what happened in February.
Mm-hmm. Do you owe that to something that you have done, or just that it went away on its own, more awareness, or what?
Well, I think, you know, we got our 15 minutes of fame, and I think that has then passed us. But as a proactive measure that we took, along with the school district that we had the issue with, that we exchanged our student councils. We went and visited their school. They came and visited our school. And at the heart of it, kids are kids. You know, a lot of time the kids that we were talking with weren't the ones that were doing the chanting. You know, I think any time that we do an exchange like that, we had some kids that were immigrants here at Perry tell their stories and how they came about coming to Iowa, and some of them are very different. You know, we have one that told a story about having to take the train from Guatemala through El Salvador to Mexico, and then get across the border. And then we had another one that said, "Hey, I jumped on the plane in Mexico City and ended up here." So, we have a great diversity, and not only in just the kids that we have, but also in their stories.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie, let me ask you about the end of June, I think it was June 23rd or 24th, the ruling by the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, actually a 4-4 tie that left it to the lower court to decide. This was the Supreme Court ruling that dealt a blow to President Obama's executive actions on immigration. With a community like yours, with so many immigrants there, what was the reaction? What did you hear in talking with community members?
I really didn't hear a lot about it. I think most people are trying to be proactive and live. I really didn't hear a lot about it in mm-hmm. my community.
What's been the reaction there, Stephanie, to this election year, to, for instance, Donald Trump's plans for building a wall, for deporting undocumented workers and their families?
Well, I think from what I've heard, a lot of people are scared. They see what's reported on social media like Facebook and Twitter, and a lot of that could be interpreted differently. But I think some people are scared, but maybe they're not mm-hmm. educated.
Mm-hmm. You get out and talk to community members quite often, don't you, Stephanie?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How often do you talk about issues related to immigration?
We talk about it somewhat, but it's not a huge topic of discussion. Typically, we talk about the people in the community, how everyone really lives together, and everyone's each other's neighbor, pretty much, is the attitude that is in Perry. Everyone has each other's back.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense that the people are mixing, that the immigrants mixing with the local people who've been there longer? Are there any divisions there?
Oh, I don't think so. Everyone lives together. It really is amazing mm-hmm. to see it.
Dan Marburger, what do you owe that to, that you haven't had any sort of self-segregation in Perry, it seems?
Well, you know, I think it's developed over a long period of time, this, this ability of our kids, and then I think it filters out into the community as well, is that they're very accepting. I can tell you when I first arrived here 22 years ago, we didn't have near the numbers of immigrants that we have now. So when I first got here, we had a half-time ELL teacher with 6 kids, and now we have, 220 kids that are most of those being immigrants are not, this isn't their native language or original country. So, our town has adapted to that. I know we did a much better job earlier when we had this immigration coming in initially of getting kids out into the community and saying, hey, these kids are just like any other kids, and they're going to be going to school with your kids, and now this makes us more like the rest of the country. And I think our town bought into that wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. I think they've done a really nice job from the city to help from Iowa State University to different at Drake University's been in here doing studies and things like that, and they've just done a really nice job of accepting. We still have our issues. You come to our lunchroom, you'll see mixed tables. You'll see a lot of Hispanic kids at one table. And a lot of that is not because of the race. It's because they're learning English, and they feel very comfortable in speaking Spanish to one another. So we've got a long way to go. But I really do feel like this community has done a great job of accepting immigration.
Mm-hmm. What are the keys to success when you talk about the challenges, facing the challenges? If we had a community that we knew, I can't think of one, but it was going to have an influx of immigrants, what would you say is a key to having harmony in the community and a nice integration?
Well, I think you've got to be very intentional about getting your message out there, and not only that, but getting, in our case, getting our kids out there. These are kids that are they want to learn. They're like sponges. They want to learn English, and they want to do as well as they can. To a large extent, their parents are sacrificing an awful lot for them to come to another country and get into our educational system, knowing that that's the way out, knowing that that's going to create the opportunities that they want to see for their kids, and then getting that message out to community members, getting our Hispanic families, in our case, for the most part, but also our Sudanese families now and some other places of immigration that are coming, getting them into our school and becoming part of that.
Okay, Dan Marburger is a Perry High School principal. Perry School District serves 1,800-some students, one of the most diverse districts in Iowa. I wonder, Dan, how much of this election is being discussed in the halls when you overhear conversations or perhaps have direct conversations with the students there? Are they talking about Donald Trump and his vision for immigration?
Well, unfortunately, they are, and it weighs heavily on their minds. My wife teaches fourth grade, and she's come home on several occasions about a kid that will just cry and just say, "What's going on? Well, we don't know if we're going to be here next year if Donald Trump is president." You know, and it manifests itself in different ways. Here at the high school, you know, we get everything from anger to really being scared. You know, we laugh about it now, but one of our pictures in our yearbook is of a student that asked another student to prom with a big sign, and it says, "Please go to prom with me before Mr. Trump deports me."
Wow.
And you can't think about that without that's going through that kid's mind. He might have changed it to and trying to be funny about it, but that's going through this young man's mind.
That's some dark humor.
It is, and we see a lot of that, the dark humor and things. You know, it just manifests itself differently in a lot of different kids.
Mm-hmm. And you have your community has put into action. You have a contingency plan, don't you? Should something happen, should deportation become a reality? Tell us about that.
Well, this came out directly out of the, I think it was in 2006, the raids in Marshalltown, and in 2008, the raid in Postville. So we started talking then about a plan of what happens when, you know, parents are deported and we're here with the kids, and it happens during the school day and at school. You know, if they would happen to come in and raid, you know, one of the employers here. So we have plans in place. For example, we're going to make sure that every kid has a safe place to go that night that has been vetted by the school. So whether that's teachers taking kids home or community members that have been vetted to take kids home for a safe place. So we worked with a lot of different agencies after 2006 and 2008 trying to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Before we say goodbye to the two of you, Stephanie Ivankovich, editor of the Perry Chief newspaper, what other areas are you most interested in your community that are connected with immigration and the controversy surrounding it?
Well, it's not really controversy, but a lot of we have a lot of events that showcase the diversity in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like next month will be Latino Fest, and during last year's Latino Fest, like the street was filled not just with Latinos, but people of all ethnicities. People from like really around the surrounding area came, and it was great. Everyone just seems to want to know more about other cultures, and I think that's great for Perry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Stephanie Ivankovich, thank you very much for joining us, along with Dan Marburger, Perry High School principal. Thank you for giving the rest of us here in Iowa and across the Midwest a little bit of a profile of your very diverse community in the context of the immigration debate here in the country.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Thanks.
It's our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, focusing on the contentious issue of immigration, of course, against this backdrop of the election and plans Donald Trump has said he has for immigration going forward, should he become president. Now on to another Iowa community with a significant immigrant population, Marshalltown. More than a quarter of Marshalltown, as 30,000 resident population is Hispanic. That's one of the highest percentages in the state. Also, a substantial number of Southeast Asian and Sudanese immigrants. So let's talk a little bit with Sister Christine Feagan. She is in charge of the Latino ministry at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marshalltown. Sister Christine, welcome to the program.
Opportunity to share some of these things with you.
Okay, great to have you with us. So tell us, first of all, a little bit about your work in the diverse community of Marshalltown that has to do with the immigrants.
Well, actually, since 1994, St. Mary's has had a Hispanic ministry office. And during that time, we've been able to help lots and lots of people with immigration papers, filling out forms, applications, things like that. We helped a lot of people with interpreting for different events. In the beginning, I've been here since 1999, and in the beginning, we had to help a lot of people make appointments, interpret for them at doctor's appointments, help them go to the bank, set up phones and things like that. And now all of those businesses have realized the need to have bilingual staff. And so we do less of that now, but we also provide counseling services. We have somebody who comes once a week and provides Spanish counseling for people. We also, because it is a church outreach program, we do a lot of things pastorally, trying to provide actually a safe, comfortable place for people to come with whatever their needs or their problems are. Mm-hmm. So I really feel it's been a blessed time for me to be able to be here to serve and to learn from these people.
What are the more current needs that you've talked about being in charge of the Latino ministry at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marshalltown for, I guess if I'm doing my math, about 17 years? What are the more current needs that your immigrant population needs?
Well, as I mentioned before, one of the things is people need help filling out immigration forms and papers because a lot of people now who have become citizens or have been residents long enough are applying to have their parents come here now mm-hmm. to live on a permanent basis with them. Or, for example, when people want to travel to Mexico and maybe the husband is going to stay here working, the wife wants to take the kids, they need a permission paper where one notarizes the other one to be able to take the child or the children with them. There's also a great need to, as the people who spoke before, to kind of get the word out to the rest of the community as to what is the Hispanic community like and why are we so fortunate in Marshalltown to have, as you said, 25% of our population being immigrant, what that has brought to our community. So it's kind of providing a link between the Hispanic and the non-Hispanic community or the immigrant and non-immigrant community.
What was the reaction from your perspective in the community there in Marshalltown at the end of June when the Supreme Court ruled, struck a blow to President Obama's executive actions on immigration that would have given undocumented workers, their families, more certainty in staying in the country?
I would say, first of all, extreme sadness. A disappointment. People felt that their hopes had just kind of gone up in smoke. And then the people who presently have DACA permission and work permits and things like that, a fear of what's going to happen in November, that kind of maybe could be taken away from them at any time. Mm-hmm. So people had gotten their hopes up and, you know, just waiting for a response, and then it came to be nothing, or actually worse than nothing.
What's your view on how immigration has played a role in this election campaign so far? Certainly the Democrats and the Republicans representing two very different visions here going forward.
Yeah, I guess I kind of wish that it would have had a bigger role, that there would have been some more positive things coming out of this. I know that Donald Trump has just caused great fear, anxiety, anger among people. And so I think that those are generally feelings that people have, in my experience.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can share a story that you've had with someone who's touched your life or a life that you've changed, a family that you've changed. We've got a few minutes left here just to make it a little more real for us with a story or two.
Well, we have obviously, there are lots of young people that have come through who have gotten DACA permission and now are working. They have full-time jobs. They've gotten driver's licenses, and their life has totally changed. they're able to help their families income-wise, and it's kind of like a whole new world has opened up to them because they don't have to be afraid that somebody's going to ask them for their papers or whatever. To think of a specific instance, I really probably should have thought of this before, but I can't think of anybody right this moment.
Uh-huh. Where do you get the most satisfaction in your work?
In seeing people thrive in our community. We have one woman here in Marshalltown. Probably people have heard of Maria's Tacos because she sells whenever there's an event, when there's a Latino event or any kind of an event around, she's always selling her wares, and it's excellent food, and it's really, really good. But I've always said from the first time that I knew Maria, if Maria had been born in a different place, under different circumstances, she would be the CEO of a major corporation in this country because she is such a go-getter and so enthusiastic about everything she does. And she, in turn, has helped so many women in our community, especially single moms, to get a hold on life. She's given them jobs. She's given them work and encouraged them to move ahead with their lives. And so she is, I guess, one example of somebody who is, to me, a shining example of what we miss when we overlook the immigrants or when we look at them from a negative perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What a world it would be if we were all able to recognize that we are all the same.
Nevertheless, you paint a pretty rosy picture there of what's going on in Marshalltown, and I don't doubt the experiences that you're sharing, but isn't there any anti-immigrant sentiment among some of the people in Marshalltown? Do you have contact with them?
Definitely there are the people that do not want Marshalltown to have changed the way that it's changed. Unfortunately, even within our church community, we have people that some years ago when the numbers were changing, and in our parish community now is about 75% Hispanic, there were actually people that left our parish community to go to the other Catholic church in town because they just didn't want to accept that change. And so definitely, no, we have miles and miles and miles to go before we're actually an integrated community. And as I listened to them commenting on Perry, I thought, we are not there yet. We're not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Moving toward it, but we're definitely not there.
Is there a dialogue going on or simply two groups, pro-immigrant and anti-immigrant?
No, I think there's definitely dialogue going on. We have a grassroots organization here called Immigrant Allies that is working to educate the community about immigration issues and what it takes to become a United States citizen and things like that. There are a lot of people who are asking. There are a lot of people who now know who their neighbors are. They're delighted to have immigrant neighbors. They're glad that their kids have good friends who are also immigrants. But it is definitely not a rosy picture, but it's definitely not black. It's not even gray. It's to me, it's looking good. And I've been here, like I say, for a little more than 15 years, and I have seen changes indefinitely for the good.
Okay. Sister Christine Feagan, thank you very much. In charge of the Latino Ministry at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marshalltown, we appreciate your time, Sister Christine.
Thank you so much, and for your time for dedicating this program to this.
All right, then. We're continuing our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, a look at immigration, a contentious issue across the country. We're zooming in on certain places here in Iowa. When we come back, we're going to talk with Cindy Golding, chair of the Linn County Republican Party, for her view on immigration. Also, Sandra Sanchez and State Senator Mark Chelgren. Stay tuned. And we're back with more of this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We are in the midst of our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, today focusing on immigration, a contentious issue nationwide. And we're looking at some aspects of it, a perspective from here in Iowa. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you live in a diverse community or you would like to comment about immigration policy, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find us Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Facebook. Welcoming to the program this half hour, Cindy Golding is the chair of the Linn County Republican Party, joining us by phone from, I believe, outside of Iowa. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, Dan.
Ben, this is Ben. That's fine. That's fine. We're hearing you just fine. Thank you for joining us. Also, I think we're joined by State Senator Mark Chalgren. Are you in our studio, Mark?
I am in the studio.
Senator Chalgren, thank you for coming in.
No problem.
Sandra Sanchez is with us as well in our Des Moines studio. Sandra is the Iowa Immigrants Voice Program Director on the American Friends Service Committee. Sandra, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
Let's turn to Cindy and Senator Chalgren first of all. Cindy, we outlined at the beginning of the program, I'm not sure how much you've heard, but of course, nationwide, people talking about the very real difference in policies put forward by our presumed nominees for president, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Where do you stand on Donald Trump and his calls regarding immigration, building a wall on the border in Mexico, with Mexico, his calls for deporting undocumented workers and their families?
Well, this is a very personal issue for me. My family has hosted 9 foreign exchange students. 5 of those were college students who actually wanted to stay in the U.S. and some of them become U.S. citizens. 4 were high school students. We also have members of our family who have married, I have a cousin who married a Mexican, and they followed the law. He's here, he's a U.S. citizen, and they have children here, but they did it legally. My personal perspective is we have a law, we need to follow it. We have helped some of our foreign exchange students become, you know, go through the naturalization process, and we really need to address making that process a little bit more friendly, user-friendly, and my experience was in the Chicago office. I don't know what it's like in the, in Iowa, because this was several years ago, but it was, we had a Brazilian young lady who just wanted to extend her visa. She was a student, college student, wanted to extend her visa for 6 months. They only allowed her to extend it for 2 months. And it was a very difficult, unfriendly, intimidating environment. So we need to address our environment. But I am a strong supporter of we are a country of laws. We need to follow.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about we've depended on undocumented workers in many sectors of our economy, 11 million or so in our country. Follow the law, but I guess the question is, what do you do with 11 million? Approximately 11 million undocumented workers at this point. Do you, as Donald Trump says, do you deport them?
I believe you take that on a case-by-case issue. I think that the media has really made a mockery of what Mr. Trump has said because the media takes a few buzzwords and then tries to create problems. So I have had a conversation with Mr. Trump several months ago. He understands the issues, and I cannot speak for him or others. I addressed him in that our situation, our system needs to be fixed,
mm-hmm.
and he agrees with that.
Do you endorse Donald Trump as for president?
I will endorse the Republican nominee when we have one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's simply a formality, isn't it? I mean, it will happen next week, barring anything really.
After next week, I will endorse our Republican nominee. To this point, I have taken a pledge that I do not endorse anybody until they're our nominee.
State Senator Mark Chalgren, tell us about your view on Donald Trump and his immigration policies.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've listened to the statements made, and when we talk about the media, Ben, I would say that you're very guilty of this also.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about this being a contentious issue, but your program starts off by saying that Donald Trump said that Mexicans are murderers and rapists.
He did use those words.
But you're telling a half-truth. What he really said was he said that those who are coming across the Mexican border with the United States include individuals because we can't screen them. We don't know who they are, that include murderers and rapists. And there's lots of documentation to show that he was accurate on that statement. But you have sensationalism in journalism that goes out there and tries to cause these issues. We have a lot of great people who've come into this country, who've immigrated to this country and done it both legally and in some cases have come across the borders illegally. There's a lot of good people involved in that migration process. But we need to be a nation that has a border. We need to have be a nation that enforces our doorway. I mean, I'm here in the Iowa or the Des Moines, Iowa Public Radio Station. The door is locked. I have to push a button and hope for someone to come to the door. And because I was invited, I was let in. Why is it different that you would have in your own radio station one set of rules, but not expect us to have the same kind of rules coming into this country? I don't understand that.
Tell me your view on what we do with the approximately 11 million undocumented workers in this country who are working in jobs, part of our economy, much needed. And we heard in the first half hour, if you were listening there, very welcome in some of the communities right here in Iowa, across the country.
Absolutely. In my hometown of Ottumwa, Iowa, we have a lot of great people who are working and contributing to the community. You know, but the way even you make your statement, you say there's 11 million people who have jobs and are doing these great things. That's not accurate. There's 11 million people who are here, and some of them have jobs, and some of them are contributing.
Okay, well,
but
I
not
mean,
all of them.
No. You can't make a blatant statement about 11 million people. But tell me,
you did.
You
made a blatant statement saying 11 million people have jobs and are working in their communities. I'm saying no. There's 11 million people here. Not all of them have jobs and work in their communities.
Okay.
We need to make sure we're accurate in our statements.
You say we want to have a country that follows the law. So I'm just simply asking you, however million people there are here who are undocumented, if that's 11 million, what do you do at this point?
First and foremost, you have to make sure that we have a border that we can control. So the people who have diseases, people who have moral problems that are criminals in other countries are not coming in here to cause problems to the United States. Mm-hmm. At that point, once you have a border that's securable, then you can start deporting those individuals who are criminals. You start with a process of people who are abusing our citizens and abusing – I mean, one of the largest groups of individuals that are being abused by criminals from other countries are the immigrants themselves. We need to make sure that if people are coming here for asylum, people are coming here for protection, we're protecting that group also. We have a moral obligation to make sure that when people come to the United States, they are safe and they have opportunities here. We're not doing that because we don't have any idea of who's walking through that border. We need to make sure we have control of our borders. We need to make sure that we're taking the problems first and foremost and eliminating them. And then we're working with those individuals who want to have jobs, who want to be here and want to become Americans. We work with it to streamline the process so they have opportunities.
Okay.
This has always been a country of opportunities.
Okay,
and
we're running out of time.
Wrong.
Sandra Sanchez.
Can I jump in here?
Yes, absolutely. You were absolutely on my mind. I wanted to have you react to what you've been hearing from Senator Chelgren and Cindy Golden. Please, Sandra Sanchez.
Okay. with all due respect to both my panelists here, I agree with several of your points, and I strongly disagree with some others. The reason why is because what has happened or has created the large number of people who are unauthorized in this country is due to some changes that were made to the immigration law in 1996, basically making it almost impossible for people to come here legally. The waiting times for people who are attempting to do so range anything between 7 to up to 30 years to be reunified with a family member. And that is one of the main reasons why how we now have a huge number of unauthorized immigrants. I agree with the premise that we need to know who is here. And in my opinion, one of the best ways to address the 11 or so, some numbers differ depending on who you ask or what data you use. But I would say that the large majority of those 11 million people, or approximately 11 million people, are good working citizens, law-abiding, other than for that that civil violation of crossing the border without proper inspection. I understand that we are a nation of laws, and we want to remain that way, and we want to respect those laws. And so are those people who are coming here being forced by a system that basically is not allowing them to reunite with family members. So oftentimes they seem to be forced to do that, and they have to do it either for survival reasons, either for persecution reasons, or because they cannot let their family become disintegrated because of these long separations. So we have to take that into account. We have to understand also that we have a large number of mixed families, meaning families that have mixed statuses. Some are U.S.-born citizens, some are legal permanent residents, others are unauthorized immigrants, and in the workforce, for sure, the numbers have proved that we have over 5 million workers who are unauthorized. The others are either homewives or they are children. So that accounts for the difference that Senator here was mentioning. Nevertheless, they are contributing to the economy, and it has been proven study after study. And I am talking about since the early 90s up to most recent data, that the crime rate among immigrant communities is actually much lower than that among U.S.-born citizens. So I believe that also making blank statements about criminalizing immigrants by the fact that they cross the border without inspection is going too far. Mm-hmm. So that's my take on
this. Okay, Cindy Golding, we haven't heard from you for a few minutes. Your take on REACT, we want to go to our caller or two here in just a moment. But Cindy Golding, I know you wanted to jump in here.
Yes. Senator Chalgren said something very important. My daughter is in California, and she has worked with rescuing undocumented immigrants from human slavery, the human trafficking. And she hears the stories from the girls. She has gone to court to testify for them. This is a very real issue. If these girls had come through a legal border transaction where they were not smuggled into the country, they would not have been sold into this human trafficking. And it's a very real issue along 80. It's a real issue in Iowa. The other thing is about that Senator Sanchez said about family members being separated. My cousin had to go back to Mexico with her husband. He had to wait a year to come back. They were married in the U.S., and they followed the law. They understood what it was when he came. They understood what the restrictions and ramifications were, and this was in 2004, so it was after the 96 change. So people know what the law is. They're trying to circumvent the law in ways. I have a family, a friend from Brazil, who they came on a student visa while they were in process. They were not allowed to go back home because they were applying for their next step. His mother got sick because they were in process. If he left, he could not come back. But as long as he was here, he was legal, as long as his documents were in process. But they understood that. They accepted it. He was not able to go home for his mother's funeral. They are now legal U.S. citizens. So I think the argument that this is terrible on families, they know what the situation is before they come here. They know that there are these laws, and they also have been told that there are ways around them. I have another student from a European country who tried to go legal. The system was convoluted. He's a college graduate from here. So instead, he decided that he was going to try a different way, and so now he's facing the challenges of being outside the system. And our system needs to be fixed. There's no doubt about it. But these people are making a conscious, intentional decision to break our laws. And there are people who make the conscious, intentional decision to follow the law. And those people I respect, those that choose intentionally to break our laws have got to follow, have some consequences somewhere along the line.
Cindy Golding is with us, chair of the Linn County Republican Party. Let's go to our caller, 1-866-780-9100, as we wrap up this hour discussing immigration. Jonathan is with us from New Hampton in Northeast Iowa. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What do you make of the conversation and the issues here?
I have a lot of sympathy for the conservative point of view. I mean, like, right now I'm in law school, and I was really sad when Justice Scalia passed away. I mean, I believe in the separation of powers and all that. But I think you have to have blinders on if you really don't believe that Donald Trump is doing a negative, is going to have a negative impact on outreach for conservatives to the Hispanic community.
Mm-hmm. Based on his comments, you are conservative, but you think that the conservative cause will suffer because of his immigration comments?
Yes. I mean, I think, right. I mean, I am totally in favor of a system shock. I mean, I actually was voting for Bernie Sanders, but now I think I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson. And I just don't think that Trump is doing enough or has distanced himself enough from comments about Hispanics to try to. The same community, because what a lot of people don't understand is, I mean, I'm Mexican American, and like most Mexican Americans are really Catholic, and you know, I think there's a really strong connection that conservatives can make toward that community. But I just think that having Donald Trump as a candidate, it's going to be going to do a disservice to that effort.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan, for your view from New Hampton. Senator Chalgren, do you worry at all about the future of the GOP considering Donald Trump's remarks, specifically here about immigration, since we're talking about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when you talk about it being sensationalized, obviously there's always a challenge there. And by the way, I completely agree with your caller. I do believe it's going to pose an issue because I believe that if you're dealing with just the subset of immigrants that come in here who are Hispanic, you're correct. Hispanic individuals coming to this country share our values very, very closely. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have any concern with that at all. I mean, our family friends and best friends are Hispanic. No issue with that whatsoever. The whole question comes down to, as it was pointed out earlier, is whether or not we're going to have a system that's legal and that works. We all on this panel agree completely that the system is broken. It needs to be reformed, and we need to have a streamlined system so that people who want to be Americans and want to come to this country and contribute and bring their values with them, we want to welcome them. But we want to do it in a way where we don't have second-class citizens. We talk about the Hispanic community having less crime. Well, there's actually just less crime reported because people are afraid to come forward. They're afraid to actually make those decisions. And the atrocities of people crossing the border have to be recognized. You know, there's predators in these other countries that are bringing the issues with them. If we can't decide and we can't filter at the border who should be in the country and who shouldn't be in the country, that's what's causing so many of our issues.
Okay, let's go to...
Can I just clarify?
Briefly, I want to get one more caller in, but yeah. Sandra Sanchez, please.
Just, I want to clarify my comment regarding the crime rates is not that among Latino or old immigrants that they are less victimized by crimes. No. What I meant is that they commit much less crimes than the average citizen. That is a clarification.
Okay. Laura is with us from Southeast Iowa. Hello, Laura. We're running short of time. What's your view?
I just wanted to make a comment that actually my father was an immigrant. My daughter-in-law is an immigrant from Japan. They both did it legally. But I'm from a very small town. We have a meatpacking plant, and the immigrants and the minorities are the majority of the workers there because the people in town feel the jobs are beneath them. And the jobs are very hard, very dangerous. And I believe we should follow the law, don't get me wrong, but there is a need being filled that other people will not fill.
Laura, thank you for your view from Southeast Iowa. Coming to the end of the hour, I wanted to get around to each of our guests with a question sort of how will the outcome of this election impact Iowa in terms of its immigration population? Can I start with you, Cindy, and ask you to be brief so we can get around to everybody?
Sure. I think the outcome of this election will determine whether or not we're a country of laws or a country of people that are, there are some people above the law and other people that aren't.
Donald Trump or other Republican candidates have said we're a country of laws. What has happened in this past week has demonstrated that the opponent believes that there's a certain group of people, especially highly elected officials, that are above the law. So I think there's a significant impact on our legal system and the perception of law in this country.
Senator Mark Chalgrin, brief, please.
Yeah, I agree with Cindy. I also would say that, you know, a lot of these individuals are coming from countries where the laws have broken down. They have failed in their own democracies to enforce laws in their countries. They're coming here looking for structure. They're coming here looking for opportunities. And we shouldn't fail them in having our laws also break down.
Sandra Sanchez, the last word from you, please.
I just would like to emphasize the fact that everybody in this country, we want to have a law that is respected, that is followed. Like I said before, most immigrants here, whether documented or not, they come here just for one purpose, either family reunification or for working reasons. The elements that are criminals are very, very few, very small. Yes, they are brutal, and we need to get rid of those, like we should, any country should. But we need definitely to create a humane, sensible system on immigration that works for everybody.
Sandra Sanchez, we have to leave it there. We're running out of time. Cindy Golding, thank you as well. And also thanks to State Senator Mark Chalgrin for coming in. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Dennis Reese, with help from Lauren Knutson. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.